Thursday night edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast, live from Boston as I'm preparing for the Sloan Conference. Danny's still back in the Bay Area. We got a bit to talk about still. We got to finish up our awards. We do all these cool categories. Got to do Sixth Man, Rookie of the Year as well. Talk about the diagnosis on Kevin Durant's injury. We're a little late on that one, but still something that needs to be discussed. Hit a couple other news items as well. Our sponsors today, Movement Watches, MVMTwatches.com/capface, will get you 15% off today. It was actually funny, Danny. Like Larry was talking about how he actually bought some MeUndies and he liked them because he and I are staying together here in Boston, Larry Kuhn. And he was like, yeah, you know, is there some code that you guys have that, and I was like, oh yeah. And I taken the red eye. I was like, yeah, it's cap space. What do you mean? We talk about it all the time. And he's like, yeah, I was just pulling your chain. I know it's cap space too. I was like, yeah, a little slow after the red eye. That's Larry's humor.
I'm just waiting for us to have polo shirts that have cap space written on it in the right place.
Should also say that we're sponsored by Betterment as well. You can get up to 6 months of no fees automated investing at betterment.com/capspace. All right, the KD diagnosis has come in. Grade 2 MCL strain. Also has a tibial bone bruise. It was initially thought that it could be a fracture. That is very good news that it's not. He probably would have been out for the year if that were the case. But the bone bruise is still significant. You got to avoid weight bearing on that. Stefania Bell of ESPN had a good article on that was shared. I was surprised, though, that he's going to be reevaluated in 4 weeks. They said it's not going to rule out him coming back in the regular season. Usually a grade 2 MCL has been 6 to 8 weeks, though. So that I would be surprised if he's going to be back, you know, if anything, before like the very last week of the regular season.
My guess is that was a little bit more about optimism, you know, just for the fan base and everything else. Like, hey, there's a chance that he'll be back. And the Jeff Stotts of In Street Clothes he actually already had the work done from Rudy Gobert pretty much from when Gobert had a grade 2 MCL sprain about a year and a half ago. And it's, 22 games, I think, is the average, 21-22, which is how many games the Warriors had left in the regular season. And my big focus on this is not so much when he gets back on the court, but when he's 100%. Because the Warriors can win probably their first round series and very likely their second round series, depending on how this all shakes out, without Durant at 100%. But once you start to get past that, and the conference finals, and of course, more specifically, the NBA finals, they will need him to be at his best or close to it. And that will be the NBA finals start about 3 months from now. And so that's if you think of it as a 6 week recovery and then 6 weeks after that, which is the way that I'm thinking about it, that's a long time, but it can take a while to recover from this sort of thing.
Yeah. I didn't see it quite the way you did, as I thought, as long as they could just get some contributions from him, make some open threes, play defense, that they would be fine with him. Even at not quite 100%, if, you know, they could get close to the Steph Curry that they had last year. But it appears, despite my prediction of about a month ago, ever since I made that prediction, he's had maybe like two or three dominating games and really has been relatively disappointing. Aside from that, he's on a 4 for his last 31 on threes or something ridiculous like that.
I think it's 4 for 32, something like that.
Yeah, and Klay Thompson has been off. They've shot under 30% on three now, three games in a row. And I think the biggest thing is that they had more of an offensive margin for error, where if they shot poorly on threes, they would be better off. Now, if Steph and Klay aren't on, it's going to be tough for them to win games against good teams. And they couldn't score at all in this game against the Bulls tonight, as they ended up losing in the fourth quarter. They also, part of the reason they're so dominant last year was what they did in the clutch. And Anthony Slater had this stat. I think they were like plus 110 in 144 clutch minutes last year, and they are plus 9 in 80 clutch minutes this year. And now, with this being another clutch loss to the Bulls, now go to 3-7 in clutch games this year. So that's going to need to turn around. And they don't have the excuse that Kevin Durant is messing things up anymore going forward. But I think we're going to see them in a lot more clutch games. Maybe they'll have a chance to work out their issues. What would you say your chances were of the Warriors winning the title before this Durant injury? And how does this injury affect those chances?
I would have put it about 60%, probably 60-65 before now probably put it about 50 to 55. I think it moves it about that much. And the question again is what, how likely it is that he's 100% by the NBA Finals. I still think they can win the championship without him, especially considering the Cavs are not sure either. I mean, we still don't know with Love and JR. We don't have anything definitive about when they're going to be 100%. But I think that puts it in about the right place. The other silver lining potentially in this, and we'll have to see it, is it forces the coaching staff to try out some different stuff, try out some different rotations, see what works, see what doesn't work. And if any of that ends up yielding fruit for the playoffs, it would be help.
Yeah, maybe they'll actually start playing their best big man more now.
Yeah, didn't put him in at the end of the game today. Instead, they played Matt Barnes in crunch time, despite him joining the team today.
Yeah, we're talking about David West, of course. Could definitely use some more time, and I think Barnes still can help them potentially.
Sure.
But they do need another guy who can make some open threes. Barnes and Iguodala is a little bit of an iffy combination out in the corners. But anything else you wanted to say on the injuries? I think I would be pretty close to where you were in terms of how this affects the percentages. I might even knock it down a little bit more, but I think, you know, over these next couple of weeks, we'll get an idea really of where Curry are, where Thompson are, if they can find their rhythm again without Durant or not. And so it's probably too early to say. I mean, it's too early to say until it happens, but it's too early to say really about what this Warriors team without KD is going to be in this new season.
There's one more thing I wanted to bring up. I wrote about this in my piece for The Athletic about getting to the free throw line. So Durant has their main guy there. It's a big part of what sabotaged them in terms of clutch offense today. They only had 3 shots in the paint total. They did not even get close to drawing any free throws. In that entire second half, they only went to the line twice. Both times were on shooting fouls by Paul Zipser, which was kind of funny. But they went once in the final minute of the third quarter and then once in the first minute of the fourth quarter. That's it. And sustainability on offense, you know, they can make a ton of threes. They can get baskets in transition. They can do other things. But Durant was helping them, give them a margin for error on both ends of the floor, but free throws are a huge part of that. And it's not only just, you know, getting to the line, shooting fouls, things like that, it's also getting into the bonus. Like, it's going to be very hard for them now with the structure of their minutes to do that, to get into the bonus early in a quarter basically ever.
All right, that's probably enough on KD. We'll move on to a little bit more news and our awards, but first this from Movement Watches. mvmtwatches.com/capspace is the URL to get 15% off your purchase with free shipping and free returns. Movement Watches are not only an excellent minimalist quality watch, looks like it costs $500. The one that I have is $135 before the discount of 15%. They range from about $95 to $150. And the way they're able to give you such a good watch is by cutting out the middle, and they don't sell anywhere other than just directly to you. So they don't have to pay a distributor. They don't have to pay a retailer. They just send it right to you. If you're an international listener as well, they sell in over 160 countries. They've sold over 500,000 watches so far. So I've gotten some messages from kind of international listeners who want a way to support the show. This would be a great way to do it at Movement Watches, mvmtwatches.com/capspace. Get 15% off today and join the movement. What else we got here news-wise?
Do you want to talk about the whole Nerlens drama? I mean, I don't think we have to go too much into that, but just the nature of not necessarily starting things out strong because he went to the wrong airport.
Oh, is that what happened? I only saw that as I was getting off the plane this morning. He was 10 minutes late to the team plane. That's from some of the stories that you hear about Nerlens. That's like the kind of stuff he does on occasion.
Yeah, there was some weird reporting about it because Rick Carlisle said because he knows Elton Brand for various connections and kind of said, you know, like, you should have done a better job mentoring him. And there was a big question about tone, and it seems like he was joking about it, but it's just like one of those things where sometimes the joke hits a little bit close to the bone, and considering Nerlens' reputation there. So that being aside, I think we might as well go with Brandon Jennings, because they used the room mid-level exception, the Washington Wizards did, to give him $1.2 million. And I really like that fit. It's not perfect, but I think it's a nice job.
Yeah, he should be an upgrade, certainly, on Burke. Boyan Bogdanovic has been playing great. He had 27 two nights ago against Toronto, as they had a huge win on the road in Toronto to try and secure that third seed. Interesting that Jennings, of course, was waived, being paid $5 million from the Knicks. It was only $1.2 million out of the $2 million they could have paid him. Remember, that room exception starts prorating halfway through the season. It was $2.9 million, so they could have offered him up to $2 million, only $1.2 million. The Knicks get a slight offset there, around $100,000 or so, not much. So interesting that that's what the negotiations were. I mean, I guess it's not like Jennings maybe had any other offers where he's getting paid more. So, and the Wizards, not one of the more financially successful franchises, so they probably are haggling a little bit over every penny, but they got the deal that they want, and they still, you know, a rest of season minimum contract would have been like, you know, $200,000 or something. So Jennings certainly did quite well there. Even so, we also didn't discuss that Joel Embiid is out for the season. I think we all realized that that was coming. We probably said just about as much that when he was out indefinitely, so don't really need to discuss it much more. We'll get into that some when we talk about our rookie of the year as well. What else we got here? A couple more items, I think.
Yeah, two more smaller items. Ed Davis is out for the rest of the year. Shoulder surgery due to a torn labrum. And Dwayne Dedman is going to continue starting over Pau Gasol, which is good because they've looked better with him in the starting lineup.
Yeah, Pop said that it just fits really well there. And it does, right? Like, Gasol is a guy who likes to pop. He works well with David Lee, who likes to roll. LaMarcus likes to pop. Dedman likes to roll. And Dedman's also, you know, worlds better than Gasol on defense. And Gasol has actually been killing it offensively. I think he hasn't missed a three since the All-Star break. He's been taking a lot more of those lately. And this is something that, of course, we've been saying that Gasol should be doing really since he signed in Chicago, that he would work better against second unit defenses. Certainly chafed against that. I'm sure he's not happy about it. But if anyone can get him to do it, it's Greg Popovich, and they're winning a ton of games, so it's hard to complain. And then that Ed Davis, that hurts because I thought he was really their only competent big man. He'd struggled through a bunch of injuries, had an ankle injury as well. He had initially injured, apparently, this labrum last year, and it just continued to get better. So now it's Myers Leonard time as the backup center in Portland. Maybe the silver lining is he can play himself into not being such a liability that they could move him to save some luxury tax in the offseason. But the Blazers playoff chase being compromised even further here by this Davis injury.
Yeah, I mean, especially considering they traded their starting center for Jusuf Nurkić, who I think has looked better than I expected at moments. He actually had some nice passes against, I think that was Detroit. I'd have liked him in that game, but they have fewer options now than they did before.
Yeah, Nurkić actually has been passing a ton, playing significantly less selfishly. And the Blazers did pick up a big win at home against Oklahoma City today. That Taj Gibson shot, did you see that, by the way? At the end of the third quarter?
I did not. I was recording with our friend Tim Bontemps for Real Gym Radio.
But yeah, watch the highlights of that. It was awesome. They tried to throw a pass all the way down to the opposite free throw line with like a second left. Taj intercepts it, and he's basically at his own free throw line. He was contested. He threw like not even like a baseball pass. It was more like he was like lobbing a grenade. It went like probably twice as high in the air as like your typical half court shot goes, and just like swished right through. It was like maybe like one of the top five shots of the year, if not like even better. Just incredible. All right, you want to do finish up our awards here?
Sure. Do you want to start with sixth man of the year or rookie of the year?
I think sixth man. We started off with Lou Williams. I think we both had him in the first month. Then as the Lakers swoon, we went to Eric Gordon. Now those guys are both on the same team. Lou Will has continued to play well. I mean, his RPM has been great. His efficiency numbers have been unbelievable. And Gordon has kind of cratered. He's shooting much worse on threes over the last month and a half ago. So I probably would go with Lou Williams. You know, just kind of talking around, asking about that with just the schmooze fest at Sloan today. Someone mentioned Patty Mills maybe is someone who should be considered as well, but probably just like not scoring quite enough there. But and certainly all of the units with him have done really well, so he might be someone to watch in the final analysis. I think I don't know if there's anyone else I'd put in the conversation besides those three guys. Is there anyone that comes to mind for you?
I don't think he's in the conversation to win, but Andre Iguodala has had another nice year and comes off the bench, so you know, we'll see how his stats change with Durant being out. But I would say you have Lou Williams, then a little bit of a gap, then Eric Gordon, then a more significant gap, and more the Patty Mills, Enes Kanter, those type of guys.
out of Patty Mills, Andre Iguodala, Eric Gordon, and Lou Williams, who would you most want to have on your team?
There's a little bit of context there, but probably Iguodala. But this isn't the award for the best player who comes off the bench for me. It's who had the most outstanding season. But that I would like to go back and actually read the rule for Sixth Man of the Year, because it's a hard one in that way.
I mean, there does seem to be a bias, and this is something we railed against last year when we thought that Andre should have won it. And then I think he proved in the playoffs, you know, some of that unbelievable defense on Durant. Like, if you wanted to win a playoff game, I don't think that Gordon, or maybe Gordon if he really got hot, because I think he's better defensively than Williams is, but I don't think that, like, at the absolute highest levels, those guys could contribute, you know, the way Iguodala did, you know, in some of those clutch moments last year in the playoffs. And obviously when he injured himself, things went poorly for the Warriors last year. So we're agreed, though, for now on Lou Williams.
Yeah, Lou, then Eric, then everyone else.
I mean, he's having one of the greatest offensive seasons off the bench, I mean, since like those Manu years in the early 2010s.
He's third among shooting guards in PER right now. And at 24, like, he's not he's ahead of guys by a lot.
All right, rookie of the year. I'm going to stick with Joel Embiid. I don't care if he's only played 31 games. I said that when he was on the floor, he was basically having probably the best season in terms of just like when he was on the floor, how much he was contributing to winning as for any rookie, maybe since Tim Duncan. Now he's only going to end up playing 31 games, which obviously is a dent in his candidacy, but there's really nobody else that stands out enough. I mean, I'm sorry, like, I'm not Malcolm Brogdon and Jamal Murray, who maybe Jamal Murray could close if he continues to start at point guard, which he won't, like Nelson will come back. And Saric, he has been averaged 17 points for February, which is good, but not particularly efficient, and, you know, not a great defender either. But yeah, I mean, worth noting that he has had at least 18 points in, I think, his last seven games when I looked at this a couple of days ago, and double figures in 14 out of his last 16. So maybe he comes on and beats out his teammate, but certainly as of now, when you consider that Embiid has played, you know, at least half the games, he's got to be the choice.
Overall impact is the most fair way to evaluate rookie of the year, and there are very few rookies that have a positive impact. You know, there are a lot who are neutral or who are slight negatives or heavy negatives, and Joel Embiid was such a clear, unambiguous positive when he was on the floor that outweighs substantially being a smaller light for longer. And I don't think that anybody can even really come close to that. I mean, Brogdon is doing it in a smaller role. He's also fallen off of that stretch where he was, I think, both of our most surprising player at one point, one of these earlier words, probably January. And
he hasn't fallen off that much, actually.
But it's something very different than what Joel Embiid was doing. He transformed their defense when he was on the floor. He was crazy high usage and did a pretty good job of it. And he's the rookie of the year. I don't care that it's that he's going to play 31 games. In another year, if there was a candidate that was, you know, closer to his impact and played 65 games, then you would consider it. But there just isn't that player this year.
Yeah. If Murray or Saric goes absolutely crazy, maybe that could happen. And Murray had like a nice, you know, he averaged like 11 points a game in February and was relatively efficient. But, you know, that's not enough to, I mean, Joel Embiid is probably the best defensive rookie since Tim Duncan. I mean, usually rookies will put up stats and they don't actually contribute to winning, but Joel certainly did when he was out there. I mean, resurrecting this moribund franchise. All right, now we can get into some of the categories that we just made up on our own. We do these every year. The biggest surprise team and player, who do you have now after we're looking at this again almost 2 months after doing it before?
I focused more on the timetable since New Year's because I just wanted to, and so I had two teams just because they're in there, and the stats might be a little bit outdated because I think I did this over the weekend, but the Dallas Mavericks, 14-11 and a plus 3.5 net rating since New Year's, and the Wizards, and this was before the game against the Raptors, 18-7 plus 6.3. both of those aren't probably sustainable, but they're so far beyond what my expectations of both those teams were at that point that I was blown away.
Yeah, I think if you look at those teams overall, what they've done during the season, it's not as surprising. I think the Wizards being, you know, whatever they are, like 12-13 games over 500 now, that's really has got to stand out a little bit. But I thought, I mean, there wasn't much reason to think they would be that much worse than they were 2 years ago if they could be healthy and, you know, with getting a new coach. So this is, I think the biggest surprise for them has been how healthy they've been, number one, and then how well probably Porter and Beal have played, number two. But this was within the possible range for me as far as the Wizards were concerned. I think probably mine would be the Rockets at this point.
For the whole season?
Yeah. When we're saying surprise, we're talking about positive. We'll get to disappointing. Don't worry. We got plenty of negativity in this podcast for you guys. I would have to say the Rockets overall would be the biggest one for me. And then maybe the other one, of course, would be Miami. I mean, that's if you're gonna focus on the period since January 1st, like how could you leave out Miami?
Wasn't a lot of Miami's win streak in December, or was it January?
No, I don't think so. I think it was all January. Yeah.
They're in there too. That is an omission on my part.
So those would be the two that would pop out to me. Although even Miami, I had for the season long, I had them over 34 and a half wins on the strength of their defense. Now, if you told me at the start of the year that they would get nothing from Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow all year and they'd still be on pace for that, yeah, then that's pretty damn impressive. So that would be it. The Bucks were our pick when we did this last time. They really were at their apex. They have fallen down. But my biggest surprise player still would be Giannis Antetokounmpo being an all NBA level of player this year after, you know, not really being in the all-star discussion last year is, of course, very impressive.
Again, I have no opposition to Giannis for the year. I mean, I think he's one of the front runners. I haven't thought too much about most improved player yet, but he has to be in that mix. And mine is more of a surprise just because of how the season started. Nikola Jokic, you know, they had that rough start to the year with, they played him and Nurkic together. I think it's a 120.6 offensive rating since New Year's. They aren't stopping anybody, but the Nuggets offense has been incredible. Last time I checked, 26 PER. He has the number 4 assist rate of any player in the top 10 in PER behind Chris Paul, Harden, and Westbrook, and ahead of Isaiah Thomas and Stephen Curry, which is completely ridiculous. He's incredibly efficient, just a magnificent player to watch. And so I thought that he was the surprise, because even though we both had rosy opinions of Jokic and thought that he had some of this in him, to actually have it materialize and have it happen during a season has been awe-inspiring for me.
Yeah, I mean, we know he played well offensively in some limited minutes down the end of last year, but I mean, he basically is an offensive superstar. Like, there's just no two ways about it. At this point, he's one of probably the 15 best offensive players in the league. So can't knock that choice at all. Next category here, most disappointing team.
I like that I did this before the results of today's game, but it's, for me, it's Portland. I mean, so Portland before today, they were 10-13 with a negative net rating since New Year's. And that is more of a stretch where they were healthier. You know, obviously they traded Mason Plumlee, but that was their own choice. And I had been in the frame of mind forever, basically, that, oh, they're going to figure it out and they'll be okay. They just had this rough stretch. Aminu was out. He's more important than we thought. They got everyone back and they still were listless. And that was very frustrating and concerning for me. They still have time to figure it out, but
Danny, they don't have Evan Turner. How do you expect them to compete without Evan Turner? He's making $17 million a year. He's clearly a key cog.
Yeah. So is Joe Noah.
For me, it's the Orlando Magic. They were last time. I mean, I thought this defense.
Yeah, that's another good pick.
That this defense could be. I mean, that is still to me the single most disappointing unit. Like the defensive talents that they had. I mean, yeah, you could say Ibaka was kind of checked out. I think he's looked a little bit better so far for Toronto. But with Biombo, who also has some defensive potential, Aaron Gordon, Elfrid Payton has a lot of defensive potential as well. I thought that Frank Vogel, a very good defensive coach in Indiana, I would have been shocked if they weren't a top 10 defense, and they're like 20th or something right now. Like, and of course they can't score to save their lives either, but we expected that. I thought the defense would be good though.
Do you want so my player, I have a number one with a bullet, and it's Reggie Jackson. I was never the biggest fan of his, but you kind of thought that you reached a basis, a foundation last year, and said, okay, you know, if he works on that, and he's just fallen off across the board. His efficiency has dropped precipitously. His free throw attempt rate, which is a big part of this, has dropped. His assist rate has dropped. And somewhat most importantly, he's 26. Like, it is not this circumstance where you see they're going, oh, well, he's going to recover. Oh, it's going to be the circumstance. And just anecdotally, when I watch them, they look better with this Schmidt on the floor, and that's greatly concerning.
Yeah, and the numbers would support that. Reggie also, I mean, his bad defense has gotten even worse this year. And part of that could be related to the tendonitis that he had. I think that would probably be my pick as well. I think Detroit has been a disappointment to me. Also, I did want to note that a couple months ago when we did this, I noted Robert Covington. He's actually improved his shooting 39% from three over his last 15 games. So he's not on this list anymore. But some others receiving votes. There's the health guys, Jeremy Lin, Jan Mahimi, Chandler Parsons, who actually, you know, is playing more now and still looks awful. The Hornets bench, especially their bench big men, just been horrendous. Like, that's killed their season. Nikola Mirotic, really, now they traded away Taj Gibson and Bobby Portis is starting instead of him. Portis actually was good today against the Warriors, but Mirotic just had so much promise his rookie year and just has not been able to fulfill it. Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng, we thought that those were awful contracts, but that they could at least contribute this year. And Mozgov is getting DNPs and Deng isn't even starting at this point on the worst team in the league.
Second worst team in the league.
Bismack Biyombo, again, you know, as we talked about, part of that bad Orlando defense. And then maybe one of the bigger ones that should be talked about is Chris Dunn in Minnesota, just has not looked like even a quality backup at his age. I didn't think he would be NBA ready, but he was supposed to be. I think the organization now, what do you do? Do you just go draft another point guard over the top of him again, just decide he's a sunk cost? Do you wait for him to figure it out? Like, it's because you obviously invested a lot of resources in him. Very difficult to say here, but it's been a disturbing year for him, especially like defensively. He's been great, but offensively, just he hasn't even shown any flashes of really like dominating play, being able to finish at the rim, set guys up and pick and roll. Like, totally unaggressive and inefficient year for Dunn.
Yeah, I don't have any opposition really to any of those guys. And yeah, I mean, I feel like I also want to just mention how disappointing it is with the Hornets. There is the mitigation with Zeller being out for a lot of this stretch, but you know, the losing to the Suns today is just horrendous.
Best win over this last period, two came to mind for me. Denver just killing the Warriors, although there's been a few teams that have done that now. And then the other one, the Clippers won 88-72 against the Jazz on the road without Chris Paul just prior to the All-Star break. That was a very, very impressive win. A Jazz team that has a pretty decent offense, and just without Chris Paul, that was a big win because that's their primary competition in the 4-5 slots as well. So those are the two that I came up with. And
certainly,
then
certainly the most memorable for me was the Nuggets barrage on the Warriors. It was just a surreal game.
They also set the NBA three-point record too. That's a pretty good way to win.
Yeah, and the Warriors had they'd won was 2 days after Oklahoma City game.
Yes, right after Oklahoma City.
Yeah, so they were, you know, you could see the possibility for a letdown game, but they just blew the doors off them. It was an impressive performance from Denver. They made history, and that's always a cool moment.
So, worst loss, this probably wouldn't be my pick, but considering like all the posturing that Russell Westbrook did to just get destroyed at home, even though Westbrook in theory had a good individual game, by Golden State in front of that crowd, can't have felt very good. But two that pop out to me, one is the Pels just getting completely destroyed by the Rockets on their first game with DeMarcus Cousins in town. That's just like, it's such a deflator to lose by 30 at home. You just got this awesome player, and it couldn't be a worse matchup for DeMarcus Cousins at center than this Rockets team that spreads the floor so well, but still pretty disappointing there. And then the other one was the Pacers playing against the Cavs. I think this was after the Kevin Love news had already happened. They're on a 6-game win streak. Granted, Thad Young was out, but they give up $132 to the Cavs at home. And remember, LeBron James didn't play the first time they went to Indiana and they won. And then that loss actually started a 7-game losing streak after they actually had gotten to, I think, 6 games over .500.
Both worthy candidates. My first thought was whoever loses to the Nets, but the Nets only won once during this time frame, and that was against the Kings, and that doesn't count because it was the Kings like 2 days ago. But the Bucks lost at home to the Lakers when the Lakers were it was before the more deep tailspin.
That was awful, yeah.
It was, and I watched a lot of that game. That game was just abysmal. And Giannis dropped, I think it was 41-8 in that game, and they still lost to the Lakers at home. And I just remember thinking that was when I went, uh-oh, with the Bucks. And I mean, I think Jarrett was already out at that point, but it's like, okay, that hope of the flicker of, oh, they can hold on and get the 8 seed because all those other teams in that mix were uninspiring. It's like, okay, I think that dream is pretty close to dead.
All right, we got a few more categories coming up, including our dunk of the month. I gleefully watched every top dunk list over the last of January and February that I could find it to come up with this. But first, this from Betterment. You can learn more about them at betterment.com/capspace. They're the largest independent automating investing service out there. They make it easier, more straightforward, and less expensive to invest. They're built on smarter, cutting-edge technology to bring you sophisticated investing and financial advice, all at a lower cost than more traditional financial services because it's automated. More than 150,000 customers have chosen Betterment's advanced advice algorithms and their beautiful user interface to manage over $4 billion of their dollars. This is a great time to get started with Betterment and saving for your retirement, or if you have other financial goals. Like, I know a lot of my listeners are kind of just getting started out of college, or maybe about to get married, looking to buy your first home. If you're a Dunked On listener, you can get up to 6 months of no fees at betterment.com/capspace. That's betterment.com/capspace. Investing made better. So it was a really good month for dunks, I thought.
Yeah, I mean,
like some of these that were amazing.
Lots of types of dunks, yeah. Too. Like you know, you had dunks on guys, you had nice dunks in the open court, lots of different types of things.
Yeah, so a few of these that really pop out for me. Kristaps Porzingis, this one might actually be number one. I mean, we can actually talk about which one we like the best, because I wanted to just get all these candidates out there.
Sure.
Kristaps Porzingis, when he came in from the right baseline on Dwight Howard and just got clocked in the face by Howard and just dunked it all over him off of 1 foot, got knocked into the stanchion. That was awesome. I really enjoyed that one a lot. Porzingis, he gets some nasty dunks at times. Norman Powell, I actually saw that one live. I was watching that game. AD actually like came out in the third quarter of New Orleans game against the Raptors and was like really inspired, blocking everything after like kind of a desultory first half. And then Norman Powell crossed over in the pick and roll, came down the lane and just poked it on him off of 1 foot with the right, but like kind of going to his left at the same time down the lane. That was fantastic. I know you enjoyed that one as a UCLA alum. One that we saw in person was also certainly deserves mention.
Oh, the Willie Cauley Stein dunk?
No. The James Johnson. We were both there for that.
Steph
tried to take the charge.
At
the charge circle. And this was like at the very end of the quarter. James Johnson came down. The Warriors are specialists at giving up buckets at the end of quarters after they go too quickly. Steph tried to like come over and take the charge, just fell down. And James Johnson just went up off a two-hand, like cocked it back hammer as Steph just like slid off of him. And then Steph was bitching for the charge after. It's like, the guy dunked it with two hands off of 2 feet on you. Like, you're not getting a charge call, Steph.
No, you are not.
Another one. This was the ill-fated game, the one game that Embiid played when he came back from the meniscus tear before he had to shut it down again. But he came, like, pump faked, drove down the left side of the lane, and with his left hand all over Nene. I didn't know that was a play that Embiid really had in him, but that was fantastic. Like, I mean, you always take a little bit off when it's a big guy, but and he completely obliterated Nene.
And then there are two Giannis dunks. I mean, both of those, I'll tell you right now that one of them was definitely the most awe-inspiring dunk that I saw for this time period. It gets so weird. It's not a month. It was 2 months or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he really had three of these. I'm only going to talk about two of them. One was the only other guy I think I ever saw take off from this far away on a dunk in like a real game was like Clyde Drexler had one from like back in the 80s against, I think, I want to say it was against like the Lakers on the road. But like Giannis basically took off from almost the left elbow, like pretty close to there. Like he definitely was like 15 feet away from the basket on a straight line in transition against the Knicks. And then my favorite right now was I want to say it was against the Heat. I can't remember who it was against, but again, he came in from the left elbow in transition, went up, and then double pumped two hands after taking off from like 13 feet away, just like the type of thing that like no one in NBA history has ever done a dunk like that. Like that's like my reasoning why I think that should be the dunk of the month.
That was my dunk of the month because I watched that thing like the Zapruder film and I still can't figure it out. Like you're just sitting there and you sit there and you look at it. And like, well, you and I have watched an immense amount of NBA basketball and I'm sitting there going like, there are very few unique things that you ever see. And I couldn't figure out how he did it for the longest time. And I still genuinely don't. It's just like, oh, his arms just extended another like 6 inches at the end of it. Oh, okay. That's how it happened.
The only other one I really wanted to mention was that Willie Cauley-Stein oop. I forget who that was on, but he like came down the lane and just like threw it in from like 3 feet away. And like Grant Napier's call too. He's just like, oh, if you don't like that, you don't like NBA basketball. Like, but like that first exclamation, like I really enjoy. Like that was just like a detonation. Like I love those kind of dunks where just like it looks like something just exploded on your TV screen.
Yeah, that was another fun one. Almost made it worth watching the Kings when Willie Cauley-Stein was in.
Yeah, so if I missed any ones or you guys disagree with our assessment with that Giannis one, that double pump, feel free to tweet me at NateDuncanNBA. Let me know how I screwed it up. I always enjoy getting those tweets. But seriously, no, I actually don't mind for something like that. If you actually have a real argument instead of just calling me a moron, I always like to hear from it. So another thing that we do is we pick up players that we want to watch for the next month. My player last month was Reggie Jackson. And, you know, I've watched a lot of Pistons crunch time, but I haven't seen much Reggie Jackson, actually, because they've been playing Ish Smith in most of these crunch times because there was that game against Toronto where it was all Ish Smith. Like they took Reggie Jackson out 5 minutes into the third quarter. He never came back. His defense has been horrible. He hasn't had any kind of explosion at the rim. He's still, you know, two or three times a game will come down and just jack a three-pointer without ever passing it. And he's not that type of three-point shooter, not really open. So it just continues to trend the wrong way for him, as we talked about, to the point where he's, I think, both of our most disappointing players of the year. So it's just, it's not going right for him. He doesn't look explosive. Maybe if he can just train over the offseason, he can get back to being that same player. There was talk that they were going to move him at the deadline. Nobody really was biting, understandably so. So I think they got to get him back to playing better. And at only 26, like you said, there's just really no reason for this other than if you want to just point to that knee injury.
Who would have thought that Ricky Rubio for Reggie Jackson would be more objectionable than Ricky Rubio for Derrick Rose?
Who was your player to watch last month?
Nerlens Noel, which was a fascinating time to watch Nerlens because he played on two different teams, and I'm still a believer in him broadly speaking, but part of why I wanted to watch him was to figure out kind of how to calibrate his value as a free agent. And I certainly would not max him out right now. I would consider giving him starter money. This next month is going to be very, very important with that because I still believe in his defense potential. The way that he covers ground is awfully impressive. And yeah. I don't
what's starter money to you, by the way? And we've talked about this before, but for new listeners, maybe, like, what do you consider to be starter money?
15 to 18 million a year.
Yeah, over 4 years. I mean, I think, yeah, you know, so that, I mean, when we talk about that, it's like, all right, I think my definition of like a good starter is a little bit more like, it is the type of player where you're like, all right, if we pay this guy, we're going to have like quality production at this spot for the next 4 years. You know, I think right. that's what you're thinking about.
Sure. And so I'm not completely sold on that point, but also I think he's in a really nice fit and scheme with Dallas. So depending on what happens with their season, I actually really want to try to watch them in the next week or two, because if they start to fall off, then maybe they'll fall off a little bit more. But they did have that nice win earlier this past week.
Who are you going to look at next month?
Chris Middleton.
Actually, are we going to do this again? What if we don't do this again?
Maybe. Well, I'm still either way.
No. We'll do it. We'll do it at the end of the year. We'll just do it at the end of the year, and we can do all these. Okay.
I'm definitely going to watch Chris Middleton just because the Bucks are a team that I'm fascinated with their future, and he's the kind of the piece that's a little bit more interesting right now because we didn't get to see him early in the year. Jabari's out. Giannis is Giannis. So yeah. I want to see how he fits.
Can I break in on this? We had to talk about this. Kid, for some reason in that game that they lost yesterday, started Rashad Vaughn. He started Middleton the previous game. And then decided that, he was going to bring Middleton off the bench. Middleton had like a good game. He had like 20 points or something, played like 31 minutes. But he decided, I'm going to start Rashad Vaughn. And Vaughn was like negative 11 in 5 minutes. It's just like, it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, and I don't want to kill Kidd too badly because I think a lot of young players have developed pretty well on his watch. But man, his rotations, there are some head scratchers in there.
Yeah.
All right. So did you have anything else on Middleton, or should we?
Not really. Who's yours?
DeMarcus Cousins. I think that's a very easy one. I want to see defense. I want to actually like watch a full Pelicans game and chart like how many times he doesn't get back on defense and see like really how bad that problem is. Because, you know, there is the argument that, all right, there are these egregious examples where he just doesn't do something well, and that I think like, oh, I've seen that two or three times during the game. Maybe there are another two or three that I wasn't specifically watching for at that time, but it probably happened. Or am I really only seeing a couple of, and I'm just going too far with saying that this is the type of player he is, and those are just aberrations that I'm overrating? So I want to really watch him closely, watch how New Orleans does. I mean, they were 0-3 without him, then he gets suspended and they blow out the Pistons as AD has a great game and they play great defense. So interesting to see what happens when he comes back. And also, of course, you know, whether he gets suspended again. Like, Verrier had a great tweet where he's like, Anthony Davis, these were his stats in his first game without DeMarcus Cousins, like totally implying that there are going to be others. He's just going to get suspended again for more technicals.
So they play the Nuggets in Denver on a Sunday. I feel like that could be an interesting DeMarcus Cousins experience.
Oh man, that's I gotta find a place to watch that. Actually,
maybe it's not this Sunday, it's a future Sunday.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah.
So the next thing was the trend over the last month that will continue. Last month, I picked Utah allowing 54% shooting in the restricted area due to the brilliance of Rudy Gobert. That was incorrect. Somehow they are allowing 62.4% shooting in the restricted area over their last 20 games as of a couple days ago.
Mine was the Grizzlies leading the league in opposing free throw attempt rate. They were at 0.362. They're still leading the league at 0.354. It's a 2.1% lead on the entire rest of the league, which is awfully impressive.
So my aberration for this month, which I'm already off to a great start because I selected these before tonight's game and the trend continued, was Golden State being awful in the clutch. The death lineup has a negative fourth quarter net rating going into tonight's game. The death lineup's not going to play, but we can still talk about the same thing with Green at center if they go with someone else besides KD. But Golden State's clutch stats overall, pretty interesting. They've only played 8 games within 5 points in the last 5 minutes all year, the NBA.com clutch definition. And they only played 30 minutes within 5 points in the last 5 minutes. They were 3-5 in such games coming into tonight. They are now 3-6. Or no, I'm sorry. This is actually before the Washington game, so they're now 3-7. And they had a +6 differential at that point. And most importantly, they only shot 7 out of 26 on three-pointers. And
that went down today.
Those threes, yeah. Yeah, they're even worse. And then before I wrote this, and this was 2 days ago that I did this research, they'd only had 2 clutch games in their last 15. They lost them both to Sacramento and Miami. They did play well in the clutch in that Miami game because they started it off down. And Sacramento, I thought they played well too. They just missed shots, although Durant was very involved. And then, you know, Washington and Chicago, they lost both of those games too. So they're now 0-4 in their last 4 clutch games. I also noted, I guess I had another one here. That's this month's trend that is an aberration. So yeah, I'm just going all over the place. What did you have for that?
For this month or last month? I can do both quickly.
Why don't you do
my last month aberration that was actually Jazz related as well. They were second from the bottom in opponent turnover rate, and they moved up from 12.5 to 13.2 and moved from 30th from 29th to 24th. My aberration for moving forward is that before tonight's game, Oklahoma City was dead last in their own effective field goal percentage since New Year's, and I fully expect that to improve with their new additions, and I think from what I'm guessing it looks like they were better than that tonight, even though they lost.
I screwed it up. What I just did, the Golden State being awful in the clutch, that actually I was saying that was an aberration last month.
Okay.
And so I was wrong. It continued. So 0-2. That's pretty ugly. All right, that's why I was confused there. I thought I was I had another aberration last month when Milwaukee had a 6.5 net rating in December. I said that would not continue. I was correct there. They had an 111.2 offensive rating. I also said that wouldn't continue. Their offense has continued to be pretty decent, 108 offensive rating, but their defense has really cratered, 110.6 defensive rating since we did this last time. So negative 2.6 since the beginning of January overall net rating. And they were the darlings of the NBA for a time. Jabari being out hasn't helped, so they swooned well before that. So, but it seems like this is really more who they are now, a slightly negative team as well. And then I also looked at the Clippers having a 109.5 defensive rating thing for December. But then they lost Chris Paul, who's maybe their best defensive player, and have had 108 defensive ratings since then. So that's 19th in the league. Didn't really change at all. So I didn't do too well on those last month.
My monthly trend that will continue, which is not a bold statement, but I don't care. The Rockets lead the league in free throw attempt rate since New Year's at 0.325. I expect that to get even more ridiculous now that they have Lou Williams on top of it, which will also make the Rockets functionally unwatchable for stretches, but way better at drawing fouls.
Yeah, Lou actually hasn't been drawing that many fouls. He's just been shooting the lights out so far with them.
It's coming. Don't worry.
Yeah. My trend that will continue is that the Lakers will continue to be absolutely terrible, as they have. They've just been getting blown out really since the All-Star break. They haven't been completing. They're playing all their young guys. They traded away Lou Williams, and they desperately need to keep their pick this year. So I think that they actually might. I could see them just being the worst team in the NBA from here on out, even worse than Brooklyn, potentially.
Lakers Suns, Thursday the 9th. It's going to be fun.
My trend from the last couple of months that I think will be an aberration, I picked two of them this time. The Wizards have had a 6.3 net rating since January 1st. This is before their last two games that they won. So again, not doing so well so far, but I think they're going to fall back a bit, especially because now they're going on the road for some tough games. But you know, they did bolster the bench. Jennings, Mahimi is back. So maybe that can keep them playing this well. We'll see. And then my other one was that the Raptors are 18th in defense since January 1st, 17th on the season. And I think that'll get a lot better now that they have Ibaka and Tucker.
I want to watch them this next little bit just to see how it works out. Hopefully they get Lowry back before the end of the regular season. But yeah, I mean, they're a very different team right now than they were before.
Did you have an aberration for this month?
Yeah, that was Oklahoma City's effective field goal percentage. I talked about it a little bit earlier.
Ah, yes. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they shot the lights out on threes against Utah. I think they made their first 12 threes against Utah a couple of nights ago, and they were shooting it very well against Portland until the end here as well. All right. I think that'll do it for today. We don't really have that much tomorrow. Do you have anything to promote before we go?
Yeah, I'll have a new Real Gym Radio with Tim Bontemps. Did the monthly tiers podcast, so we went through all that. That was good. And then normal stuff for The Athletic. And if you want to read my trade deadline stuff for the Sporting News, I wrote about DeMarcus Cousins, and I wrote about the kind of the calculus on both ends of the Nerlens Noel trade, which I found fascinating. I was sitting there at the end of the day, that's what I decided to write on.
Yeah, we also did that Twitter NBA show Second Screen last night. The next time we're going to do that will be Saturday, March 11th for Warriors at Spurs. That'll be a really fun one. 5:30 Pacific time, 8:30 Eastern for that on Periscope. And that'll do it. We'll be back Sunday night with some new material for you. Don't forget about our sponsors today as well. Betterment.com/capspace gets you up to 6 months of no fees. And Movement Watches, MVMTWatches.com/capspace, 15% off your order. Talk to y'all next time.